This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 377, brought to you by C2E2 and iFanboy listeners just like you. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 377. My name is Paul Montgomery, and joining me, as always, Mr. Jim Rutschkowski.
Hi there.
That's not as always.
Almost never.
And filling in for Mr. Connor Kilpatrick, who is away at a cactus convention, is Mr. Joshua Flanagan.
Hi. Where's the twang coming from?
I don't know.
All right.
I heard Connor was on administrative leave.
It was an incident.
Yeah. There's always an incident.
There were flames.
But this one became public.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. Just no comment.
At ifanboy.com, we like comics and we read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the best book and writes about it on the website, and we talk about it on this year's podcast along with various other topics of interest. And before we get to the show, a quick reminder/warning, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about Volstagg getting crucified run right now. This week, Josh had the pick.
He was really big, though. So what happened was they had to starve him down. We're not even talking about that.
It's not even on the list, but I just needed to mention it.
But if we're going to talk about controversy with a small C, controversy, I think the pick of the week, Avengers Arena number 6, which is like, I feel like 6 is like, oh boy, they're barely putting out any issues at all.
Right.
They actually come out, you know, monthly, crazy enough.
Yeah.
Avengers Arena number 6 was my pick of the week. This is one of those books that they announced, and I thought, oh, no one's going to care. But really what happened was everybody cared before they read it because they thought it was the most awful thing that had ever been put forth. But at the same time, every time that I had talked to a pro or anybody who'd seen the Marvel Now stuff before it came out, they all were like, that's the book to watch. And, you know, I was sort of neither here nor there. I wasn't really familiar with any of those characters from Avengers Academy because I didn't read it. It's my fault. You know, and I...
You see the Runaways, right?
I did, but I feel I felt like this was like the spinoff of Avengers Arena. Also, I hadn't read The Runaways in a while, and I don't have a ton of it's not one of my favorite books of all time. There's a lot of people who really love it, but I would
love it to come back if Brian K. Vaughan was writing it, but
the
characters
though.
For the sake of the characters, I don't necessarily need.
Yeah, I think there was sort of a Half-Life problem with The Runaways.
Yes, and even so. You know, when he wrote it later, it was like, all right, it was like the first arc was really good, and then, you know, that was also a long, long time ago, by the way. We're not going to ascribe a number to it. Anyway, the thing is, this issue is the last issue of the first arc, and I was reading it, I've really enjoyed it the whole way through, sort of despite myself. And as I was reading this issue, I was really impressed by the level of craft and the sort of work that Hopeless had done to get to the point where I know who all the characters are, and they're basically, you know, it really is the high concept pitch of it's the Hunger Games with a bunch of Marvel teenagers. That is exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And no one's trying to go, no, it's not the same. They're not doing that.
They hung a lantern on it right from the get-go.
And you know, fine. I like the Hunger Games. You know, at its basis, it sounds pretty grim. And I watched the movie thinking, boy, that's pretty awful. But didn't mean it wasn't entertaining. And I think that the main thing for me here is that these are fictional characters, and fictional characters should be imperiled. They should be either emotionally or physically or both, and that's
always
what the,
always imperiled.
If Uncanny X-Men were a softball issue every month, none of us would ever have heard of it. They need, you know,
and
I'm not telling you
anything.
Baseball
bats had nails through them.
Oh,
hell yeah.
And the other side of this is that the thing that's great about this book is that there's a lot of wonderful things about Marvel and the way that the characters act and the kind of powers that they have, but they're mainstream superhero comics, and because of that, they have to maintain a status quo, and it's the illusion of imperilment. Except for this book, nobody's really that important from a market sense, so everything is fair game, and that, to me, really makes it fun. And so I read through this specific issue, and I'm getting to know Anachronism, which is an awful name.
It really is.
Awful, just terrible name. I don't know who came up with it or when the character showed up. Doesn't matter. And I'm getting to know, and they're leaving a trail of breadcrumbs. I'm like, well, some shit's going to go down. Yeah. And it's really kind of a slow burn comic, and it's not about plotting. It's about hanging out with these characters and making all of them, and there's a lot of them, compelling enough and interesting enough for me to care what happens to them, and that's exactly what they did. And
I think that's the key here is when they introduced the full roster of, you know, all the kids were going to be there. It was the Avengers Academy kids, the Runaways, some other kids that we've seen in some other properties, but then there was these Braddock Academy kids, and everyone was like, oh, they're cannon fodder. They're just there. They're meat-filled socks, which is, I believe, the term they use for the other Islanders on Lost that weren't the main characters. They could just be eaten whenever, you know, they needed someone to be eaten. But the thing is, they're not written that way. They're written like they're as important as the other characters, as the more established characters like Nico and Chase and Hazmat.
Lost is actually not a bad comparison because that was a show that had a a lot of characters for a network show, and they mm-hmm. really built something unique out of almost all of them. And that feels like this is what this is. It has a lot of that there. That's a good.
And also to that, each issue is usually devoted to one or two characters. It's their issue.
Yeah, there was a big cliffhanger at the end of the last one that they didn't even address in this issue. Which I thought was interesting because I really wanted to know what was happening with that other thing, but that's fine.
I have a whole bunch of almost Claremont level loose ends that I'd like to see revisited soon. Like what happened to the poor Sentinel kid and what's going on, what the whole Darkhawk situation is. Do we think that the dead people are actually being killed?
I hope so.
You hope so?
I'm going to be really upset when we find they're in stasis later.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Because he
cut that dude's head off.
He certainly did.
So
yeah. Well, the Darkhawk question is interesting because it's two different questions. It's Chase is the new Darkhawk, or at least he has the powers, the amulet or whatever. But then the guy who used to be Darkhawk, I don't know if he's been officially pronounced dead. I think he's just on the verge there.
Yeah.
So that could go either way.
I know that theoretically the little health bars that accompany each character as they move through a given issue are sort of like cold-hearted, tongue-in-cheek or whatever, but the more video game tropes I see in the whole thing, the more I wonder if it's not going to all turn out to be some sort of virtual reality situation, even though Arcade has never done anything like that before. There's, you know.
That would be bad. I think it would really undercut sort of the things that I like about it, but I don't know.
I think it could be bad. Like on paper, it sounds bad, but then it would depend what happens after that.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I think there are ways to rectify that and make that still work.
Just like I said or wrote anyway, when people were complaining about it before they had read it, why don't we act as though the writer likes these characters too and wants to tell a good story instead of ruining your childhood or whatever? But and
that's
you know,
the thing. I think he does like these characters, or at least he puts enough into them, and they're very disparate. There's many different kinds of characters, and they feel like kids. I just recently read the other thing that Hopeless did for Marvel first, X-Men Season 1, and I was really impressed. In sort of the same way, he really has an ear for, you know, not necessarily like this is what kids sound like, but they feel like kids. They have that that bravado mixed with I have no idea what I'm doing.
Right.
Which is my adult life also.
There's also a sort of a backdoor aspect to this in that all of these characters are living at a more heightened level than they have in recent years. Like, I mean, Avengers Academy characters are fairly recent, but some of the other characters, like the Runaways, they weren't really getting much traction elsewhere. And so to put them in this high tension situation, you get a heightened version of their characters, and they're doing more interesting things than they would have otherwise. So I think if you're a fan of these characters, don't look at it as, oh no, they're all being killed. Look at it as we're actually getting a really great examination of who they are and what kind of choices they would make. And I think that's fantastic from a character standpoint.
Yeah, that was my other thought when I wrote about this. It's not that these characters are being killed, it's that they're being used. Like, would you rather them be alive in a drawer for the next 15 years? This is what happens to guys at this level.
Yeah.
You know, I still forget who Bloodstone is every single issue.
I do too.
He needs his spotlight.
He's
in
Cullen?
A hurry.
No, that was the, yeah. Is he Cullen?
Yes.
Okay. So he's the one in the sweatshirt with the skull.
Right.
I love that sweater.
Okay, now he's a really good example of the other part of this book that's fantastic is, of course, Kev Walker. Now, Kev Walker, I assume, has been around before he showed up on Thunderbolts or Dark Avengers or whatever the hell they were calling it at the time.
Right. That's where I came to know.
Right. And I did too. And instantly I was like, whoa, this is a guy who I want to see more of. And this is just more of that. And when you're going to talk about Cullen Bloodstone, I guess, which sounds a lot like Cullen Bunn, by the way.
It does.
Whenever
somebody names a character Cullen in a comic, and it's come up a couple times recently, I always wonder if it's like a tribute. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think it's Destro, but that's just. Anyway, that character is a perfect example of Walker is drawing really unique sort of physical types for each of these characters, and a lot of them look like kids, but a lot of them look sort of like hulking, grown, muscly versions of kids, as opposed to just sort of regular superheroes. I feel like his style's got a little something off with it that I like, that sort of makes it unreal, but that sort of makes it fits well in with, you know, the way that teenage life feels a little bit. And when you watch, like, if you look at Cullen, like, his sweater is like a little bit big, but he's always got this smug sort of smirk on his face, which is, you know, like a defense mechanism. It's how, you know, some kids, you know, try to be tough all the time and they don't care about anything, whatever. And I really like, there's a ton of really good acting and good physicality to all these characters. And, you know, it could be kind of boring. It's a lot of kids walking around nowhere. And the acting that takes place in the art really takes it a long way. You know, there's, you know, fine colors and inks and all that. And, it's a good looking book. It's a really good looking book. Better than you would think. If this was a book at DC, if the book at this level was at DC, it would have the most saccharine artist imaginable on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, the fact that the
I'm thinking
so
it would be that book where they shipped all the villains off to another planet. That's what this book would be over at DC, where no one was paying attention to it whatsoever.
Yeah. I still remember when I realized how a little bit of insight into how the business worked, when it turned out that Dan Slott's She-Hulk was not selling as well as they wanted it to. The interesting artist that I loved disappeared, and they got this like discount artist. And so ever since then, like I've used that phrase a lot. Oh, discount artist. It's circling the drain. But so when I heard, like, when Thunderbolts came out, I thought this is not at the top of anybody's list. So let's see what we're getting here. And like, almost never is the guy who you open the book to find in that situation one of my favorites. But this Kev Walker just leapt right to the front of the pack, like everybody else was standing still.
Now, Jim, we got to wrap up on this book soon. But I thought you might not like this book. You don't like kids getting killed.
When I heard about it, I had as much trepidation as all the people who were kvetching about it. But I bought it because I bought a lot of number ones when Marvel Now started rolling out, more than I did at DC, because, I don't know, I guess they gave me space. Maybe I was a little bit more familiar with it. I don't know. They've been doing it over 4 months instead of one, but whatever the reason, I thought this sounds like a ripoff in which characters I like that don't get a lot of attention otherwise are going to be disemboweled and are nine, you know, like, so, but I bought it. And as it turns out, the writer likes the characters as much as we do. And he doesn't want to exploit them. And he doesn't want to murder them for the sake of murdering them. And he's not some a-hole. And, you know, you trust the writer to tell his story and you're not disappointed. Now, I will turn around, Josh, and say to you that I was stupefied when I realized you made this pick, because I didn't think you were going to be giving this book the time of day at all.
I don't know. The only reason I did was because I heard from lots of people that it was real good. I met Dennis Hopeless at New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked him when I interviewed him, so I thought, oh, I'm gonna read his book, and I think now I can say I think he's gonna be a big deal.
I think
that prediction. I think he's gonna be a go-to guy. I think he's gonna, you know, he could be something like the next Jason Aaron.
If I'm not mistaken, I do tend to confuse people at this stage in their careers, but I think he's writing Cable and X-Force 2.
Yep,
which is another book that
I didn't
never
go that far.
Yeah, that's another one that I never would have touched. You know, even a few years ago, I would have punched you in the throat for even suggesting I would buy that book, but it turns out to be, yeah, it's pretty good. As I recall, Ron didn't like it, but wow. He's gone and I'm here. So.
Now, I've been told by at least 80% of the iFanboy community, I was wrong about this, and that the pick of the week is actually Batman and Robin number 18, all silent issue, commemoration of more dead children. There's a lot of dead children in comics lately. But I've been talking a lot. So Paul, what did you think of yet another book called Requiem?
Batman and Robin. I was honestly excited to see that it was a silent issue, because those are always fun, and it seems to me a great challenge, because a lot of story is conveyed through dialogue and caption boxes and so forth. I thought this was really good. Now, It's sort of like, but then again, when I saw that it was a silent issue, I was like, oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Which is another thing, is that sometimes maybe the silent issue is not warranted. or at least it's been used in this way many times. But I think this was done exceptionally well. I think it told a very good story. It's a little bit maudlin.
Well, understandably.
Understandably, but then again, I think the more, at least my interpretation of the Batman, a little bit more honest interpretation of how he would go through the loss of Damian is in regular Batman 18. Mm-hmm. But sticking on Batman and Robin, rebar alert. There's some rebar action in here as Batman goes vehicular, and I love, my favorite panel in here is when the Jim Gordon and the police go up on the roof because the bat signal has been turned on, and they find all these crooks lying around. Yeah. Because Batman has gone on a spree, which I think is a fantastic. I think it's a fantastic insight on Batman's psychology, that if he was depressed, he wouldn't stop being Batman. He would be more Batman than usual.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he would go out on the street and just collect up all the scum and just be super proactive and toss them up for the police, all bound up and gift wrapped. And I like that there's a parallel.
Legally, they would
between...
just have to let go immediately.
Right.
It's just, there's nothing you could do with that.
I like that's also in parallel with Snyder and Capullo's, or excuse me, not Capullo, Andy Kubert, and Maleev's Batman number 18, yeah. Which also has Batman being kind of reckless and just going on a spree, collecting up all the scum, and is a Harper Row issue.
Yeah. Just real quick on Batman and Robin, this was never, ever close to being my pick of the week for a moment.
Interesting. Okay.
I felt like, and this is, I said this as soon as I knew that Damian was going down, I was like, oh, we're just going to get moody Batman. And I've read it. Yeah. I don't care anymore. I've been through it. And I got to say, like, I thought that this was technically well done. I thought it was really well drawn. There was some nice, well, there was some Mignola in here, and there was some Frank Miller in here. It was a lot of Mignola, actually. You look at it and sort of putting things on paper, but at the end, like, I just felt like I've read this 100 times, and you just mix and match the character and the tragedy.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not necessarily the case, but it didn't, I felt no emotion for it. It was like, let's do a sad issue. And just putting like we've used the word requiem. We need to not use that word, comics.
Well, you know what? That's just the branding.
No,
but
I know.
But the thing is, you know, part of that is your baggage coming to it. To be honest, like,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
no,
the fact that you've read that before, and how much, you know, like, how much is that Tomasi's fault?
Well, I mean, because he's read it before. And he's not bringing a, they're not bringing a new thing to the table. They're bringing
it's
a
not
formula
even,
to the table.
It's not even you read it before in Batman. I mean, speaking of Maleev, this is as close to the Batman Daredevil crossover with Bendis that we're probably ever likely to get.
Yeah.
But like, you remember how everybody got with Daredevil before this new life was breathed into it a year or so ago? Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe that's what it is.
Everybody else, I don't know if everybody else was like that, but I was not enthusiastic about this Joker whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I read this and I was like, oh Christ, how long is this gonna happen?
I kind of want to take time off.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get it. You know, people are down with it, and that's, I get why it had no emotional effect on me at all. And I really like Damian as a character. That sort of makes me sad, but the fall.
Who was the guy who killed him?
It's his own clone.
Oh.
Or not
clone. Okay.
Yeah, his own clone, or his own, like, born from the same sort of vat as him.
Yeah.
He just grew him up.
Because, I mean, a lot of us have seen, in some cases, as it was on the stands, a lot of us have seen the Joker beat Robin to death with a tire iron.
That, to me, was much,
like,
more.
You know, after that.
And you know, Paul is right. Like, I've been, like, comic cycle. Every 10 years, it comes around again. But
yeah.
At the same time, I know that there is such a level of talent that they can do all sorts of different things, but they don't for whatever reason. I'm not blaming creators necessarily.
And you know what else? Not to pile on, because I know that's not what we're supposed to do, but it would have a lot more of an emotional impact, I think, if they weren't telegraphing this Harper as the next Robin, like before the body is even.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't. Yeah, I think a lot of fans are suggesting that there's even another girl in Batman Incorporated that other people are suggesting is the new Robin. Because
so I've fallen prey to wishful internet.
Well, the problem is that there's too many Robins. That's why this had to happen. There's like eight Robins. Right. So we have to cut down. I wouldn't be shocked if they took out another one. Because there's too many Robins.
Yeah, I always just liked Harper as her own character, and I liked her interactions with her brother, and so I like the character. I don't love the character, but I think she's interesting, and I like that she doesn't put up with Batman's bullshit. So
I like that he punched her. That part I liked a lot.
Well, those issues are yours. Yeah. I'm not going to delve into that.
Mm. I just liked that it happened. I was like, oh, wow, he slugged the girl.
All right, should we talk about Sledgehammer 44?
Every time you say it, that damn song. Anyway.
I was fully expecting this to be the pick of the week because I thought this would be your jam. This is a Dark Horse thing. Very interesting story behind it. It's Mike Mignola, John Arcudi, and Jason Latour going to town on a project that was originally envisioned for John Severin, who sadly passed away before they could do it. He wanted to do a World War II story set in the Hellboy universe, and he passed away, and so they had Jason Latour on it. And it's a very simple story. It's kind of there's a bit of Atomic Robo-y in here.
Yes.
A bit of that. And really, it's not the story that grabbed me, it's the art. I feel like this is just a great showcase for Jason Latour, and it's about a robot or something, maybe some guy in armor, maybe enchanted armor. We don't know. Set down in a bomb in Nazi Germany.
It's literally the scene from the beginning of Thor, I think, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Same
yeah.
area.
Right. And he comes down, and he's just this big juggernaut in some fatigues, and this group of soldiers.
Captain America.
You can be forgiven. They came out within 6 weeks of each other.
Yeah,
that's true. And so it's also about the group of soldiers who are sent to be sort of his backup as he goes in and takes down Nazi robots.
Mignola and Arcudi doing random soldiers. Like, they should do a book called Random Soldiers, and that would be the best book about war. You know, on the stands, which is good for about 2,500 sales.
right.
But no, Paul was like, "Did you read it?"
I checked your pull list, yeah. And was like, "It's not on there."
Wait, so I did, and you were right. They made a book for me. In the back, you find out that this was actually developed as a follow up for John Severin after they'd done the Witchfinder book, and oh my god, that would have been beautiful. Not that it wasn't good looking, but
it would have been a different thing. And you actually do see a panel that he'd worked on, yeah. Which is like extra melancholy, to see that he was working on it. And John Severin's fantastic, but Jason Latour on this, it's a completely different vibe, and I can't even describe it, but the scenes where, this Sledgehammer 44 character, robot, whatever it is, going in and busting up robots, it's super dynamic.
I love the size of the character.
Yeah. And the big panels.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really nice. He gave it a lot of space.
Lots of just great visual storytelling. Some I guess that's hand drawn sound effects.
Ooh, yeah. Or
you could go either way, or else it's just really good. You know,
yeah.
Artificial, but
or at least different.
You know what it looks like? He just took like white out or something. Yeah. I mean, I know it's not that, but it
might
kinda
be.
Looks like
I mean,
that.
It's very possible. No, it isn't. Or even if it's digitally hand drawn as opposed to just text, the sort of templates that have been used for sound effects over and over again. Whoever it is over at Dark Horse that is picking artists to pair with, Mignola or Arcudi stories, whether it's, Mignola picking them out or whether that's Scott Alley, has a hell of an eye. You know, just over and over and over again, they're picking out these guys that, James Herron, or they're picking out Tyler Crook or Latour, who's been around a while but isn't so well known. Just has this great eye for this kind of thing. And over and over, these books just look fantastic. And this is another one of those where just these big action set pieces, and this was colored really interestingly by Dave
Stewart.
Yeah,
it's Dave Stewart, but it doesn't necessarily look like, a usual Dave Stewart thing. It's a really interesting palette. There's, golds and moss greens and God, it's just beautiful.
It's a fun book, and it seems like the kind of thing that, I mean, if I missed it, I'm guessing a lot of you guys did. So if you like the kind of things that I normally do.
Yeah, I'm sad to see one of two. I didn't know that. Well, I knew it was,
if it
like
was
a
for Severn, it literally would have taken him a year to draw that. So
yeah, but oh man, why? Do not miss this.
Yeah, I totally agreed. The runner up for pick of the week, speaking of gorgeous color, was Manhattan Project's number 10.
There's only two. There's only two colors in this.
It doesn't matter.
I'm kidding.
And that's not true. They're shades.
I know.
Shades. I had been reading this digitally, and I started getting it on paper. And I said this on Twitter, like, this is an argument for books in print.
Mm-hmm. I saw you raving about it. What makes the paper better?
You know, if you look, just look at Hickman's designs for his covers, and you see how meticulous that is. He carries that all the way out in, you know, the sort of paper stock and the quality. Like, the paper is blinding white, and the colors are just, because it's only the two colors, this bright blue and this bright red, they're just jumping off the page.
It almost looks like it should be one of those like old school like 3D comics, because it's just red and blue for the most part, and just super saturated reds and blues.
It's too. So effective, though. Much more than you would think. And
what's it about?
This is here's the thing, though. I don't like dream sequences. I don't like psycho sort of just strange, weird stuff going on in people's heads.
I remember the Sopranos dream sequence that lasted like three episodes, driving you visibly nuts.
Oh, it's awful.
This is our mutual pet peeve. We hate dream sequences.
Now, that being said, this totally is that, and it totally works. Mm. We're in the surreal mindscape of some corner of Oppenheimer's mind, while the blue Oppenheimer is trying to fight his way through and figure out what it is to not be assimilated by the red Oppenheimer. And a red horse, that's my favorite part of it, a red horse comes up to it. All the red characters are the evil Oppenheimer's sort of minions, and what you find out more about how it works. And it's really well explained. Right. Like, I understood it at the end of it, and I understood the purpose of it, and I really liked it, because they turn this surreal dreamscape into something that's real enough to understand.
It's simple rules, and it's color coded, and it's all explained perfectly well, and you sort of get all the symbols. I love the page where he climbs Blue Oppenheimer, having been eaten by his brother, the Red Oppenheimer, and absorbed into his psyche, climbs out of the iris of a like Mount Rushmore style. Edifice of
Oppenheimer,
and then goes on sort of a vision quest and encounters a red horse and punches him in the face.
The horse tries to punch him, so then he punches the horse in the face. They get into a fist fight. He bites the horse's ear off. Later, the horse has its face cut off with a samurai sword, and the horse keeps going. Then they eat that part of the horse while the rest of the horse stands nearby. It's just wacky. It's really fun.
And it all comes together with that last page where he decides to and the Oppenheimer Civil War began. And so by cutting out another one of the samurai Oppenheimer's eyes, and that was a red Oppenheimer, he turned him into a blue Oppenheimer. And because we understand this color coded thing, it's just like this great storytelling and a great cliffhanger. And weird.
I want to say one other thing.
Yeah.
Word Oppenheimer 10 more times.
It's fun to say. This is one of the best drawn horses I've ever seen in a comic book.
That's a really good point.
comic book artists constantly complain about drawing horses, and the whole time I was thinking, this is such a well-drawn horse. And it's featured prominently throughout the thing. So most comic book artists, this is Ryan Brown, most comic book artists would get something full of a horse and they'd be like, oh, frig. And he drew the snot out of this horse.
I never see a picture of a horse without thinking about that now.
Oh, you can't. Crowds, cars, and horses. They're anathema. you don't want it. Anyway. We wanted to let you know that this show is brought to you by C2E2, which is the premier Comic-Con in Chicago, which is coming up once more because con season started, people. April 26th to 28th at the Chicago in the West Building of the McCormick Place. Comic guests include Brian Azzarello, Kieran Gillen, Rick Remender, Paul Cornell, Amanda Connor, Andy Diggle, Chris Burnham, Brian Wood, Jim McCann, John Layman, Mike Norton, Tony Moore, and tons more. That's a lot of people just to list. Mm-hmm. With one of the biggest artist alley at any convention you could find. And if you want more than just comic guests, C2E2 has stars from the rest of entertainment, like Adam West, Brian Posehn, Julie Newmar, Walking Dead cast members, and of course, wrestlers. Such as wrestling sure. is giant, by the way. I can't get over how big wrestling seems to have gotten in my sort of peripheral vision. DDP is going to be there, and
the
Jake
Diamond
Sonic
Cutter.
Robbins. That's right. I met him once, shorter than me. I used to work on Battle Dome. Don't really? Get left out. Yes, don't get left out. Buy your tickets in advance and save. A 3-day pass is only $55 if you pre-order, or $65 at the show. But buying in advance is the only way to guarantee entry at the show. These shows have been selling out. Is what we learned about the big shows. Go to c2e2.com to order your tickets and get all the information. Again, that's April 26th through the 28th in Chicago at the West Building in McCormick Place. Check out c2e2.
I think I have been there every year so far. Love
it. It's a big show that no one has anywhere else to go to at.
Yeah, I get there by train. Yeah, it's one of the bigger shows in the Midwest. Got to meet .com from 30 Rock last year. A good time was had by all.
Lovely.
I'll see you there.
Josh, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Where is Jake Ellis, number 3?
I tell you, this is the first time that I've had a good answer for that. I had to like look up. I was like, what was the last one? Oh, okay. I read Who is Jake Ellis, and I really like it, but I stuck around mostly for Tanshi Zonzik. And then this second miniseries, by the way, Nathan Edmondson, way to figure out how to do a whole franchise for yourself. This is Where is Jake Ellis, number 3. And I will say this is like the first issue that I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. And I think it was notable for that. If you'd sort of stuck with it this long, you get the light is shining more on what you need to know about what's going on, and it's intriguing.
So is there sort of a Carmen Sandiego vibe to this?
I have no idea where it is.
Okay.
I read the first miniseries. I'll jump back on for when.
it's just a lot of watch checking.
Right.
I like how is Jake Ellis.
He's
everyone's
okay.
Everyone's worried about him.
Really good. I think Nathan Edmondson's another sort of new creator who's been very smart about picking the people he works with. He's got, you know, like he's got the books that he puts out are beautiful. He's got this book, you know, with Tanshi Zonzik, and he's got The Activity with Mitch Gerrits, and those are just two really good looking tense books. That's one of the best things you can do as a new creator. But it's cool to be a lot of times at this point in a lot of sort of first series, they're not going to be very interesting, but it is, and it's still moving very fast.
Jim, tell us about Demon Knights, number 18.
Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. I'm no Josh, but that was my Pacino. I thought I was going to drop this. Don't try to make that sound like it was me. I thought I was going to dive off of this with you know, my whole body when Paul Cornell left, because he was really the only reason I was reading it in the first place. And then they go and pull a Venditti on me. I think Surrogates was one of my favorite graphic novels really since I came back to comics low these many years ago. So I thought I'd give him a chance. And, you know, although I remain a big fan of Paul Cornell's, I must say that this new run is far more straightforward and has engaged me in a way that I had trouble with the first. It felt like the entire series up to this point was one single arc. I don't know if anybody
I left after I heard Paul Cornell was leaving because I'm an asshole like that.
I did. It's all right. I did it with Saucer Country. When I heard it was canceled, I stopped reading it. Well, mea culpa. This was one of the books I took a chance on for the new 52. I didn't know who any of the characters were, and I feel like I got a pretty good sense of that from Cornell, but I felt like they were sort of in a holding pattern after a while there, and now they are they're on a mission. They're apparently getting the band back together. They're reuniting for the first time in decades. Like, apparently the first story was the only time they've really hung out up till this point, and they have to stop Kane and his growing army of vampires from reaching whatever Wonder Woman's island is pronounced like, because
Mascara.
Yeah. If vampires get there,
the Mascara.
Yes. If vampires get to the Mascara and they turn all the Amazons into a vampire army, then they will take over the world. So it is up to our intrepid anti-heroes to
stop them.
That's a pretty bold high concept that I can't believe hasn't been used yet.
Yes, well, it is being used right now, and it is very easy to explain, as you obviously, and it's been a ripping good yarn. I presume you could even enjoy it if you hadn't read it up till now.
Oh, I'm sure. Is this his first?
Yeah, this is his first arc. I think this is like issue 3 of it, perhaps 4. But yeah, it is holding my interest just when I was eager to not give it the benefit of the doubt.
Now, you are reading a book called Extreme X-Men, which is yes, now over.
Yes, I am. I wanted to talk about Extreme X-Men, and this is its last issue, so that's probably not...
Good thing you made it in time.
Yeah, just in the nick of time. Paul, you may remember recently you and I were having a conversation in the context of another podcast that has not come out yet about what happened to Greg Pak. Yeah. Over at Marvel, he looked like he was going to be one of the whatever they call him now, architects or big guns or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then he moved to Hercules, and then
called the Nowiteers.
Right, he was one of the Nowiteers, we thought, but now he's as far as I know, the only thing he's been doing is toiling away at this book, Extreme X-Men, which was on issue 12 this week, which was its final issue. And basically, if you were a fan of the book Exiles, this is the Dazzler that we all know and love from the Marvel Universe proper has been yanked into a team along with like a Teddy Roosevelt version of Wolverine and a Nightcrawler who's a 12-year-old boy and a gay Hercules and Xavier who's a floating head in a jar.
Sounds fantastic, and if it didn't have this terrible name, I would have read it.
Exactly.
Or if you had been around to explain this to me.
Right. It had a very straightforward mission. It reminds me a lot of like one of those TV shows that was on in the 80s when I was a kid. The floating Xavier head in a jar has tasked these heroes from a variety of alternate dimensions to track down 10 evil Xaviers in 10 other dimensions who are ripping apart reality as we know it by being evil and very powerful. So there's an issue where they have to fight a Nazi Xavier. There's an issue where they have to fight an Old West Xavier, you know, and all of these realities have their own versions of heroes that we know and love. And it is just a really bonkers A-team.
Cool.
Essentially. And the bad news is it's too late for you to save it.
But sorry.
You can still go back and enjoy it. Oh, and in a true... major comic book publisher move, the final issue ends on a cliffhanger that is continued in some bullshit miniseries that I've never heard a word about before. I think it's called Extermination or something, but it's
an
not
event, isn't it?
What isn't, buddy?
Yeah, it's true.
You know, if at this point I've never had my heart sink as hard as when I opened the page to the Age of Ultron tie-in ad this week. I was like, oh, I guess I should have assumed this was happening, but it still hurts me to see.
This is their thing, though.
Yeah, I guess so. But
let's keep the X-Men. You know, people are missing it. So let's finish up on Uncanny X-Men number 3. This was the one that I was like, okay, I can't read them all.
Boy, I never thought I could hate. I mean, I thought I hated Scott Summers when he was just boring.
Uh huh.
Like when I was a kid, why is this guy? But now. He's for those of you who don't have the pleasure of reading this and who know anything about Avengers versus X-Men, in this issue, Scott, who is a fugitive from justice and is trying to pattern himself as like this champion of human rights or whatever, got to confront Captain America and the Avengers again, and he blamed them for killing Professor X, for the death of Professor X, I should say, which if you read that story, you know you threw this book across the room.
So they're saying yes. Tony Stark is responsible for unleashing the Phoenix Force on them, and then
yes. That
caused Scott to kill Chuck.
Yes, if they had just let Phoenix jump into Hope, which as I recall, the Phoenix didn't want to do in the first place, all of this would be fine. They'd all be living in Utopia. Phoenix totally would not have set them all on fire.
There's my thing,
Marvel scapegoat.
Oh my
thing. I'm still very much enjoying this book. I think it's helping that they're coming out so quickly.
Yeah.
In the fact that it hasn't moved a lot. But I like the mission statement of the book. I hate Scott Summers too, but I like the fact that there's some sort of dubious characters.
This is nothing like when Ron was here.
this is a positive review.
No, but I think his characterization is very interesting. Yes. So and I like the fact that it's a book of dubious adult mutants who are leading a group of very impressionable new mutants, and one who worked at a corn dog or on a stick place and keeps mentioning it. The other thing I thought was really interesting about this issue, the Magneto reveal happened very quickly. I mean, the first issue was about him being, you know, a turncoat and telling S.H.I.E.L.D., reporting on what Cyclops and all of them were doing. And then in this third issue, he tells them that that's what he's doing and that he's a triple agent now or double agent. That's kind of interesting. I kind of wanted that to be – actually, it's weird to say, but I kind of wanted him to string that along a little bit longer.
It's only been like 3 weeks.
Because I like that conspiracy.
It's very reminiscent of what he's done – what he did with Spider-Woman when he was on the Avengers.
She
was working for Hydra and she was working for S.H.I.E.L.D., but she told S.H.I.E.L.D. she was working for Hydra and she told Hydra she was working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know – in her case, it was really a lot more clear which side she was actually on, whereas with Magneto, honest to God, I have no idea who he's playing for anymore. But that is good. I like that. And I also think – and I don't know if anybody else sees it this way, but I think Brian Bendis, especially by having a sort of carte blanche with the universe, has had a lot of opportunities to use shades of gray in the whole good versus evil thing. Like with most bad guys – they're just mustache twirling bad guys. And even if they explain their rationale to you with some exceptions like Mr. Freeze or whatever, but by and large, their motivation just sounds like rationalization to you. But in this case, you've got Brian Bendis writing the Jean Grey school team in one book and writing this brotherhood of ambivalent mutants in the other book. And each of them has a different perspective. And like he seems to see things from all of his characters' points of view and inhabit their minds.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like he's faking either side of it. Like he feels genuinely that there's something to believe in on either side. And that's I think it's fascinating. And I think that they're finally making something of the mutant problem in the world with the Avengers. It feels like now they all belong in the same universe and it's not just the X-Men over there in their own corner. And I'd say that now, not just Avengers versus X-Men. I'd say now in this status quo, it feels like a cohesive world.
Right.
With a unique struggle. So.
Amen. And the art is pretty.
It is. It's very nice.
I'm on Team Bacalo. Not everybody is.
Awesome. Let's go over to user reviews now. The top five pick of the weeks are by the community. Number five, Manhattan Project's number 10 with 1%. This is sort of a juggernaut of a win here. Nowhere Man number 4, Men number 4, which we were supposed to talk about. Sorry. we can fit that in. Nowhere Man number 4 with 2.8%. Batman number 18 with 3.1%. And Uncanny X-Men number 3 with 7.8%. And the number 1, Batman and Robin number 18 with 81.2%.
It's kind of nuts.
maybe they thought that Scott Snyder was writing it.
Right.
I can't tell exactly how that happened.
No, I mean I'm saying nuts not because it's nuts that they chose it, but that is a huge number.
It's a big number.
I can absolutely see why they chose it, but it's a big number.
Jim, do you want to read the first user review?
Oh, sure. This is by our old longtime listener, Ken Ochalik. Ochalik?
I don't know.
Yauto parts? He wrote about Star Wars number 3. He gave the story 4 out of 5 and gave the art 4 out of 5. I can't disagree. Pick of the week was 0.2%. He writes, I'm not an enormous Star Wars fan. I've seen the movies and I really like them, and that's about as far as it goes. So I've been picking this book up off the shelf each time it comes out, mostly because I like Brian Wood's writing. But after this issue, it's got me. I'm in. I don't know if it was
Deonda's, yeah, my script is a little screwy. Deonda's awesome double-page spread of the second Death Star, Wood's continued buildup of middle management Darth Vader, which is outstanding. He didn't say that, I did. Or the way he's making this world feel lived in a way I never really got from the movies. But I'm really digging this story and its execution. So even though I don't quite believe it myself, I'm buying and enjoying a Star Wars book. Do you think my shop owner is Jedi mind tricking me?
Isn't that Jedi mind trick you when Luke Skywalker gets some action?
Yes, there are
there's some canoodling.
This is what happens when there's a second woman in the universe.
That was, who knew? There was Ula. She's presumably
yes,
female.
Yes, of course.
Mon Mothma has been around and
not hot.
The only thing about this that bugs me is their insistence, like all science fiction comics and extended universe comics, on using the word credits when referring to money. It's a
Star Wars thing. That's a
clunk, clunk, clunk. That it was introduced in Phantom Menace. If that's what you want to hang your hat on, that's fine.
It was used in the books before that.
Oh, well.
Timothy Zahn used it.
I like money. I like wealth. I like riches. Credits, just clunks. I don't know. It's my own personal thing. I also don't like when they love to use all those apostrophes in the names, but that's my thing.
We like Timothy Zahn around here because he came up with a ship called the Yuana Buyer.
I didn't
that
know.
That is good stuff.
Paul, take us home.
Captain Algonquin 17 wrote of Peter Panzerfaust number 10, story 4 out of 5, art 5 out of 5, pick of the week percentage, nope. This issue just made me feel good. Between the budding romances and the Lost Boys rallying with Peter, I ended it and just said, yeah, things are all right. The romances were handled very well and create a good dynamic going forward. My favorite scenes in this book, when other people describe who Peter was, Wiebe does a great job in this issue showing that Peter cared deeply for everyone in the group and would do anything for all of them. We start to see the side of Peter that is really hurt through all of this, but that also has the support of Wendy to help him. Just a continually innovative adaptation. Like, it's not just a one-to-one adaptation of Peter Pan. He's doing something something different, and that's pretty cool.
A little boring. There was a lot of care. Like, every time I read this title, and I hear somebody in character talk in flashback about how wonderful Peter was, I just want to stab my. I know you've said you said 100 times how he's the most amazing man. You've said it so many times.
I confess that I hopped off after the first arc because I thought it needed a hook, both literally and figuratively. But if it gets a lot of rave reviews for this next chunk, I'll pick it back up.
That's your part of the show. If you're listening to this and voting on the website, if you want to, you can make your pull list there. You can rate your comics and you can make your pick of the week. And if you write a good review that we find and want to use on something we didn't already talk about, then you can even get that read on the show like these fine folks before us have. Paul, what's another way that people can help out?
You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon and buy a piano, is what I'm saying. Not just a keyboard, but, you know, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. A big old piano, some nice junk in the trunk, big piano. Teach the kid, teach yourself. It's never too late, I think. I don't care.
Or buy if, you know, the Amazon Prime families like us, me and my house, maybe you get grape nuts sent to your house every month because you can't get in the car and drive to the grocery store. That's your business.
The vitamin water, you can get the coconut water. You can do that whole thing. You can get them randomly every
Absolutely.
Couple months. Get some of that delivered to your house.
Toilet paper.
Some
regional food, Malamars or whatever the hell they eat out there.
Or you could buy books. You could buy books on Amazon, and it helps us out because we get a little bit of that pie, and we like the pie.
Sometimes people ask us how they get to that, and if you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, that works. But also, anytime you see like a little iFanboy banner on the site, and if you reload it like twice, you'll get it. Just click on that. Go to Amazon through there, and then you'll get a little cookie that works for a little while. So
bookmark that.
We want to make it easy for you. That's the really, once you click through that thing, you replace that with your current Amazon bookmark and you'll be good to go. That's what I do.
Yep.
Well, there you go. We're going to go straight into some audience questions, some more participation from the folks. First question comes from Tony and he says, Week in and week out, I find my pull list getting larger and larger. I find myself easily dropping around $30 a week or about $20 on a slow week. When does it become way too much and becomes this weird OCD comic fan thing? I can't think of any other hobbies that include a price tag of $30 a week. When do you guys cut yourself off if it gets to be way too much? First of all, you should expand your scope of what you think other hobbies might be.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure
those take it from me, those Civil War reenactment costumes are not
some skiers out there going, I think I could beat 120 a month.
Not even that. When I was in college and CDs actually cost something, I knew a guy who would go every single Tuesday to Streetside Records and come back with something.
What kind of drugs did he sell? Because that was a lot of money for a college kid.
Yes, it certainly was. And I probably shouldn't know. But I'll tell you, I don't consider $30 a week to be that bad. My wife asked me when she was last having a budgeting panic attack how much I spend on comics a week. And I told her $30. Mm-hmm. But often it will creep up into the low 40s.
Well, that's because you have a structured annuity.
Right. Now let's address this question. There is obviously there's the relative nature of money. Everybody knows somebody who has more than them. Everybody, you know, thinks, you know, whatever. So really the amount of money you spend has got to be what is appropriate for you, and nobody can say what that is because it's different for everybody. Now, do you feel – the real question is, do you feel like you're enjoying it for the money that you're spending on it? Obviously, you feel like this is a lot of money. So the question is, do you feel like – this is worth the money that you're spending on. Are you having fun with this $30 worth of comic, which is roughly 10 issues a week? We call that a light week around iFanboy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you guys get this? I mean, you buy a lot of comic books.
Yeah. Or for that matter, are there things that you wish you were doing that you either don't have time to do or can't afford to do because you're doing this? If so, stop doing this and go do that.
Yeah. And that might make this better.
You also decide what's your preferred format. Are you buying something just to buy it, and would you rather have it in a nice collection down the line? And maybe you can cut your weekly list so that you can maybe put that on your little Christmas wish list, and get that later on as a nice collection. So do you have to read it right now? The other thing, this might be a stupid question: are you reading everything that you're buying every week? Because there was a point where I wasn't, and I was just buying stuff, and I would. There would be things that I definitely read every month, but there would also be things that would just stack up, and I would get to them when I got to them. And in that case, why don't I just get a nice trade paperback or hardcover?
Or just not, you know,
or not buy
it
at all.
Yeah. You know, this happens to me. It's not sometimes it's about money, but it's not always. But sometimes you do get into a habit of doing something, and then you have to step back and say, why am I doing this? Am I enjoying this? Is this a thing? And you know, I get this. You know, if you read, you know, Marvel Comics or DC Comics long enough, you'll start to feel cyclical. And for me, that's always the time that you need to change it up. You don't say, hey, there are 8 X-Men books, and I really like the X-Men. So you start buying them all, and you like them on a scale from, you know, 8 to 2, and you know, my rule of thumb is, if I'm not really enjoying something, if I can say something, oh, it's pretty good, but if I'm not really enjoying it, then I don't want to read it. I don't want to spend the time on it. I don't want to spend the money on it.
I've been a dropping machine lately.
I mean, I'm a four star or more guy. If it's not that, then I don't, you know, 3 stars doesn't interest me usually.
We stepped on Paul. I stepped on Paul.
No, I was just gonna say, you also have to ask yourself, how good is the security at my shop? Would my van survive plowing into the front of the storefront?
You wouldn't be the first. Like, what I would say is, and I don't know if Tony gets his books on paper, if he reads them digitally or whatever, but I humbly suggest that getting an issue that you missed or skipped is easier now than it has been during any point in history. So it might be an interesting experiment to take a month off from half your books or all your books even, and then 4 weeks down the road, come back and see what did I miss? What do I feel like I need to pick up? What did I not miss? What did I forget that I was reading? Which is something that I have done before, is never a good sign. You know, I don't know what you'll do during that month. You may rediscover your wife. You may find time to call your mother. Who knows? But
maybe you'll find a new, more expensive hobby.
That's
right. Mountain biking's pretty expensive.
I've learned that from sitting at your feet.
Yeah.
Don't do that with prescription drugs, though.
True enough.
No.
True enough.
Stick with them.
All right. We're going to go with one quick voicemail, and this just breaks your heart.
It's Ryan from Worcester, and it's It's been a year and a half. I promised I wasn't going to do this. Sorry. But where is he? Where's Wally? Where is Wally West? What has DC done with him? I miss him. I miss Linda. I even miss the goddamn stupid kid. Sorry, but my question is, who do you miss the most since the reboot from DC? And you can't say Peter Parker. All right. Sorry, guys.
You don't miss the kids.
No, no one misses.
Nobody misses those kids.
It's literally the worst thing Mark Waid's ever done.
It is.
And I mean, and that's a storied career, so, you know, it's fine, but literally.
He's more than made up for it.
It's funny. Wally's gone.
Forever.
Yeah. Well, there's already a pocket. There's an Earth 2, so who knows? You know, Stephanie Brown's gone. Is that your answer, Paul?
Stephanie Brown?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. I would say Stephanie Brown, and I would say Tim Drake. I miss the old characterization of Tim Drake.
I can't think of anybody, because I was never a diehard DC guy who vanished. But as a dilettante, I will say that I wish that there were more talky tawnies in the world.
More fun, silly things.
I wish that Captain Carrot hadn't been reimagined as like a deadly serious badass who's probably going to stab a 10-year-old through the intestines.
What kid's going to die next week is what I want to know.
Right.
I've got another one. I mean, as much fun as I'm having with Earth 2, and I do like that book, I do miss the traditional Justice Society of America. That was one of my favorite books coming into comics, the Geoff Johns Justice Society. And we were talking on Twitter, me and Connor and Tom Caters were saying that the DC is always better when there's a Justice Society of America in the universe, and there is not. So I miss characters like Wildcat and Jay Garrick.
That's a good answer.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say you wished for a more traditional straight Green Lantern. And that everything was – I was going to learn all sorts of new things about you. But
no.
Every time now it's gotten to the point now where every time I hear the word traditional, I go, oh, shit. Here we go.
No,
Dad.
I can't say there's a character that I miss who's gone. I liked Wally a lot, but I'm not reading it anyway, so it doesn't really – I will say I'm going to take the Paul cop-out method a little bit and say Oliver Queen, because that guy is not my Oliver Queen.
With the mustache and the
goatee. I want the beard. I want him older. I liked him crustier. I like him as being like a high status guy who's earned it through time and respect, and I liked that a lot.
Do you think these new sort of explicitly political books that are coming out of DC in the coming months are going to recapture any of the old luster for a Green Arrow?
No. No, because I mean, come on.
I think
word of the day is milquetoast. I mean,
yeah, I think there are so many different stories and things that are trying that cry out for the old Oliver Queen. Like, the story would be so much more interesting if they had Ollie, you know, the liberal Ollie, the defender, the crusader.
You add him into the mix of what's going on, like the one older guy who has no powers but can hold his own with like the Justice League people right now. You've got something. Like, you just put him in there. But you know, I know why he's not there. There's a TV show, and that's going to make more money for him than any of the comic books will, and that's fine. So,
speaking of that, this is a slight tangent, but do either of you read Avengers Assembled by Kelly Sue DeConnick?
No.
No one has ever – the Black Widow has never said, I have read in my ledger, even a single time until that movie came out, and now I think – it's on every third page of this book.
Yeah.
Like they've decided that they're going to make this happen.
I will be honest, and I do use that in copy whenever I have to mention the Black Widow.
Right.
Like it's her catchphrase.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's what are you going to do, you know? All right. So if you want to write in, you can do so at contact@ifanboy.com. If you're more of a talky person, you can call us at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, and leave a message for us. Try to keep it short. If you want to put on a little skit, you can, but it doesn't usually work. Although, Ryan, you made it on, so good work. Paul, what else is going on?
We get some other podcasts. If you check right under this episode in the feed, you will see a new Talksplode where I spoke to the lovely Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hartman.
Oh, you did it wrong. You got it right so many times.
I know. I know. I've said it a million times already. Karina Bechko. I apologize. The H is silent. And Gabriel Hartman talking about Star Wars Legacy number one. You may recall that there was a book called Star Wars Legacy by John Ostrander from Dark Horse in recent years. This is a new chapter of that. It takes place hundreds of years after the events of Return of the Jedi and stars a young woman named Anya Solo, who is the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Han Solo and Princess Leia. And
Anya.
It looks very good. And we spoke about that and bringing some political intrigue like they do on Planet of the Apes, their ongoing Planet of the Apes Cataclysm book. And so check that out. And then next week is the Booksplode about Planet Hulk, which I've been talking about forever.
Hey now. I don't know why I did that. I'm kind of feel bad about it.
There's also you went from Arrested Development to Jeffrey Tambor to whatever that show was called.
Yeah. I didn't finish it. I'm horrible. There's also the Make Comics podcast on Mondays where we talk about how to make comics with Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience, former editor of Marvel and IDW, who knows his stuff, and me, who fakes it real good. So you can find that stuff over at ifanboy.com. You can read my Pick of the Week review. You can read Connor's Book of the Month review, which actually went live, and I believe that gives me grace period in April.
No, it doesn't.
You can read all of the comic book stories and pieces that we put up during the week, and you could read Jim Mrachkowski, the column machine. Never misses a deadline, always on time, no excuses. You have something up every time.
Come find fault with something I've said.
You know, the people care. A lot of stuff goes up. No one says anything. You've never had that problem.
I don't know.
The people
Indeed,
care.
I have not, and I can't be more sorry. But I've managed not to have a sick out or anything. Maybe I'll use it up this week.
You are the opposite of milquetoast. in that way. You can go to ifanboy.com/about to find out how you can yell at Jim in other ways on the internet. Right. That's always good to know. You can follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy, depending on your preference, so that you don't miss any of the stuff that goes up during the day.
And you can jump the chain of command and complain about Jim to us on email at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc.
I know that I lost at least one person from Avengers Arena.
Really?
I thought it would be more, but... I bet he's listening. If you like us, you can write a review in iTunes. You can tell people about it. These are the ways that the show gets known about in the site. Post those links on your social networks. If you see something you like, talk about it. Tell people about the podcast. Talk about it at the shop. Do whatever you can. If you like the show and you want more people to listen, which is a good way to keep it around, you can go do that. We've been threatening that for like almost a decade, so I guess it doesn't mean anything. But we really appreciate whenever you do this, those kinds of things, because the advertising budget is squat around here. And that is all for this week's show.
Are we still giving out the link to that map site where you put a pin where you are when you listen?
The Frapper map?
You're
old
school. The Frapper map.
I think that frog got run out. Wait, that's frog. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Fine. All right, so that's it for this week's show. I'm Paul.
I'm Jim.
Who doesn't read his script. I am Josh.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So I killed children, and I didn't see them die. I killed children, and make them promise cry.